Steve Jobs, fresh from the sting of being unceremoniously dismissed from Apple, bought a little-known graphics company called Pixar from George Lucas. For years, Jobs personally financed the company, hoping that it would be his comeback story, breaking new ground in the technology of computer animation. For Pixar to lift off the ground, though, it would need help. And that was where Steve Jobs turned to Lawrence Levy. What Levy, a Harvard-trained lawyer and executive, found as he explored Pixar was a company on the verge of failure. In his new book, To Pixar and Beyond, My Unlikely Journey with Steve Jobs to Make Entertainment History, he tells the story of what happened next. How, working closely with Jobs, Levy produced and implemented a highly improbable plan that transformed Pixar into one of Hollywood's greatest success stories. Again, the name of the book is To Pixar and Beyond, and Lawrence Levy joins us on the roundtable this morning. Lawrence, thank you very much for being with us.
A pleasure to be on the show. Thank you.
At what point did you know that you wanted to tell your story and ultimately Pixar's story?
Well, you know, I had told the story off and on through talks over the years, but it really didn't come up until after Steve tragically died early, and a lot of material came out about him, and it was mostly about Apple, you know, his first stay at Apple and then his return to Apple. And I started to feel that the Pixar part of the story had become a bit of an afterthought, when in fact it was really important to the whole thing. So for the sake of sort of setting the record straight in a way, I became more and more inspired to tell it.
So Steve Jobs was at a point where he was dismissed from Apple, and he bought Pixar from George Lucas. Talk a little bit about the inception of the company and ultimately what Steve Jobs liked about it and why he wanted it in the first place.
Well, interestingly, the inception of the company was really a vision to build a graphics technology company. George Lucas had started a computer graphics division of Lucasfilm, and he decided to spin that off. Steve bought it in 1986 with the hope of building a computer. It was called the Pixar Imaging Computer, which in fact they did build, but they had shut it down a few years later. But that was the original vision behind Pixar.
Then animation started to come into the picture of that this is something this could do very well, is this computer animation.
True. Animation came into the picture as a way to, test the graphical capabilities of the computer. So they started to try to make short snippets of animation because they were really interested in three-dimensional graphics, and animation was a great way to prove that.
In the beginning stages, that's where you come in, because Steve Jobs felt that the company needed help, and he turned to you. What was your initial task, what he wanted you to accomplish?
What he wanted me initially to do was to find a business strategy for the company. When I got to Pixar, from a business point of view, certainly, it was in some trouble. It had burned through $50 million of Steve's money. It had very little to show for it, very little revenue, no profits, very high expenses. And it was doing all of these different kinds of things. And he was interested to sort of hone a strategy that could take it from that place to a viable growth company and then eventually even go public.
So talk a little bit about that strategy and what your thoughts were on that strategy in bringing the company back and what this company could ultimately do and accomplish.
Well, it's a funny thing. I was a sort of Silicon Valley business executive. I understood, you know, the hardware, software, those kinds of businesses, as did Steve. And it didn't really occur to me when I arrived at Pixar, it wasn't an entertainment company. It didn't even think of itself as an entertainment company. And that's a strategy that almost arose by default. I started learning about the entertainment business actually by going to the library and getting out a book on entertainment industry economics. And I began to realize that that path was sort of Pixar's only hope in a way, and that it was important to understand that. But even then, there was a fair amount of resistance because it's such a risky enterprise.
You came in, and as you are coming in, the very beginning stages of what would be Pixar's first great success, and that is the film Toy Story. You came in, and that was in its infancy, correct?
Yes, when I came in at Pixar, there was about it had been in production for a while, but there was still a year to go before it would come out, and there was a lot of doubt even around whether it was even possible to finish it on time.
You talk about what a slow process that was of putting that all together, and ultimately what we saw on screen. It was difficult.
Oh, I liken it to climbing Mount Everest or even landing on the moon. In a computer animated feature film, there's 110,000 frames that all have to be drawn by a computer that can take hours, days, or weeks per frame. So the logistic complexity of putting that together is incredible.
Talk about some of the decisions that were vital early on into the company that ultimately proved to be the right decisions, in the sense of, okay, let's do this. And when you look back on it now, that you're glad, I know you write about some really good fights that you had with Steve Jobs, of some of the ones that you won and are proud of because it ultimately worked out well.
Well, you know, there were two or three decisions. I think one of the hardest at the beginning was the decision to focus exclusively in animated feature films and to shut down the rest of Pixar's businesses. They were in software and some other things that they were doing, and to not go and not diversify into kind of live-action film. And at the time, that struck us as extremely risky because no company had really done it. Even the Walt Disney Company had diversified away from animation 50 years earlier. So that was kind of a scary leap. But, you know, it's what the strategy sort of called for, and we went for it. Another decision was the decision to keep the creative control over Pixar's films with Pixar's creative people. And I talk about that a lot in the book because it's also a very difficult thing to do. But those are the kind of decisions that we made that I look back and say, you know, it may have seemed crazy at the time, but it worked out.
And just things about the technology that they were dealing with very early on, that because of the lights and the shadows that this particular type of computer animation created, that there was a decision made that you would want to go with toys as opposed to people because it was easier to animate than skin because it looked more realistic.
Yes, all along the way, in fact, Pixar was making decisions about what was possible. And so it started with toys because they have plastic surfaces and it's much easier to sort of do 3D animation with smooth surfaces than it is with skin and clothes. It's amazing. One of the hardest things to do in computer animation is clothing because of the way it wrinkles. We don't notice that kind of thing. You don't notice how your shirt or jacket wrinkles or whatever. But when you try to put that in a computer animation, it's very difficult. Over time, Pixar built the technologies to do all of those things, which is why you see the films get increasingly sophisticated in their look.
Now, as the film was wrapping up, as Toy Story was continuing in its production, but as it was wrapping up, you were still looking for investors. You were still looking for people to get in on this. How hard of a sell was that, and how ultimately convincing was the work that you had accomplished prior to that opening?
It was an extremely hard sell. One of the things, when I went to start writing the book, I said to my agent, you know, I'm going to turn an IPO into a thriller because that's what it was. It was a thriller. Even though it sounds like a sort of a dull thing, but it's actually a very exciting thing. And in Pixar's case, the reason for that is because investors look for certain qualities in a company, stability, growth, predictability. That's what investors like. And Pixar had none of those. There was no way you could make animated feature films in a business that looks stable, that grows steadily. It's the opposite because it's completely hits-driven and it's very, very risky. And so many investors weren't interested in that, and we were very forthcoming about those risks. And our view was that, you know, if there are investors that want to share this ride and believe in this vision, then we'll find them. And if there aren't, then we get it. We know you know, the risks in this business. So it took time, but fortunately there were enough that bought into the vision and loved the notion that, you know, we were essentially trying to create, you know, a new Disney in a way, and people liked that, and eventually we got the investors we needed.
This story is very much about you, very much about Steve Jobs. Talk a little bit about John Lasseter, who, of course, was the creative force and continues to be at Pixar.
He does. In many ways, I consider sort of John like the Mozart of his generation in terms of animation. And there's two things about him that matter. First is his own creative genius. He just has the pulse on animated entertainment and storytelling. So in that, he's probably unparalleled. But he also had this tremendous skill for picking other people that could direct films. And so in the early days at Pixar, individuals like, you know, Andrew Stanton and Pete Docter that went on to do these incredible films were proteges of John. And he had picked them out and was training them to become directors themselves. So those two qualities were vital to Pixar.
When Toy Story opens, I mean, it defies all expectations. Box office is crazy. It's $192 million. It's one of the biggest animated films ever. It's just a matter of days later that Pixar becomes a public company.
Right. I mean, we didn't have a lot of choices back then, because we're either going to take the company public before Toy Story came out, and we didn't think that was even possible, and we didn't even want to do that for fear of what might happen with Toy Story, because we had no idea what would happen. And if we didn't do it shortly after Toy Story came out, we might have to wait like 3 or 4 years, because it would be a dry spell before our next film came out. And so we took a risk in a way of saying, okay, we're going to be ready to go after Toy Story comes out. And if it's a flop, we know we won't be able to go, but at least we'll be ready. And that's the strategy we took.
You eventually ended up leaving Pixar. What led to that decision?
Well, a couple of things. Eventually, I went on to Pixar's board of directors, and eventually Disney bought Pixar, and then that was the end of that as the board dissolved. But I also had other, you know, I felt I'd had a great career and a great run in Silicon Valley, and in many ways I was interested in discovering what my own movie was about, and I was very interested in philosophy and meditation and those, especially Eastern philosophy, and I had noted that despite all the prosperity and success, you know, within Silicon Valley, that in many ways corporate life was sort of one-dimensional, very focused on performance and acquisition, and I was interested in understanding sort of other dimensions of, and possibilities of life. And so I went off to take a sabbatical to explore all that, and that led to sort of another campaign or direction in life for me.
Let's talk a little bit about the sale to Disney that you mentioned, because you were very fearful about Pixar's momentum and worried that how big could you get and would it shatter?
That's right. Pixar's stock had skyrocketed, and if a company's stock skyrockets like that, and it becomes very risky, because it means that just a small miss could have a huge impact on the stock. And so if Pixar put out films or its films began to decline even a little bit, it would take a big hit for investors in the company. And companies in that kind of situation, they usually try to diversify their risk. So they'll try to buy other companies or they'll end up being acquired. And in this case, at that exact moment, Disney was going through a change in management. Bob Iger was coming in as the CEO. There had been a lot of speculation about whether Disney even cared about animation anymore. But Bob Iger most definitely did. And that changed the whole tone between the two companies. And that's what eventually led to the acquisition.
Where do you think Pixar stands now in this world, in this creative world, and allowing them and that company to do what they do best?
Well, you know, we used to say at Pixar that there's never a shortage of great films. And so a filmmaker in many ways is always, they're not competing with other film studios or the rest of the market. They're in a way competing with themselves. Can you make a great movie? And that's always the challenge. You know, Pixar honed a culture that had tremendous capacity to do that, to bring together the creative, technological, production, and business forces. Probably honed that like no other company. But every time it comes up to bat to make a film, it'll be faced with those same challenges to pull that together. And I think it's positioned as well as it's ever been to continue to make great films. That will always be the goal and the challenge.
You look at a brand, though, Pixar has not had many misses. I mean, it's certainly been many more hits than misses.
Yes, that's what made Pixar so rare and made its culture so rare, and I talk a lot about that in the book, but it doesn't mean it makes the next one easy. And so and I think Pixar understands this, it's a constant vigilance. You never get to sit back and say, gee, we know what we're doing, look at all those great films we made. If you do that, then you're in trouble. Every time you sort of come up to make a creative project like a movie, you have to bring all that same vigilance into it.
Well, it's a fascinating story that you tell in the book, To Pixar and Beyond, My Unlikely Journey with Steve Jobs to Make Entertainment History. The book is by Lawrence Levy. Lawrence, thank you so much for sharing with us. A great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book, To Pixar and Beyond by Lawrence Levy. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.